Over the past 10 years or so, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart has grown into something of a cultural phenomenon. Stewart often interviews presidents. He interviews world leaders. Candidates for political office stop by his desk. They're trying to court the young audience of the show who say The Daily Show is their main source of news. But when The Daily Show began, Comedy Central was a tiny network with a very small budget and very few cable subscribers, and the host was not Jon Stewart, but Craig Kilborn.
I'm Craig Kilborn, anchor of The Daily Show, and I know lots of words.
The Daily Show, every Monday through Thursday at 11.
And the woman who was running the show back then, the woman who co-created it all, Liz Winstead. And she joins us in studio today to talk about her new book, Liz Free or Die. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is an early morning for a comedian.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it used to be. Now I have dogs. And so no matter what happens, it's 6:30 a.m. for me.
And you have dogs that are high maintenance as well.
Problematic that are not. I have non-radio friendly dogs. Anecdotes that aren't that friendly for the radio, but funny for the book.
Yes, we're not going to go into the problems that you have. You'll need to buy the book in order to find out.
But if you've ever had a rescue dog and paid $75 for it and spent $9,000 in medical bills, you will appreciate my dogs.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit more about actually your career. And let's begin with The Daily Show, because this was a show that was really created by you and another woman.
Yeah, Madeline Smithberg.
And it was born out of what I can only assume from your writing was a real anger. I mean, you seem to have gotten really, really fired up about the kind of news coverage you were seeing every day, especially over Desert Storm. Can you explain?
Sure. Well, you know, when The Daily Show launched, and it was 1996, when I was trying to figure out how to write about The Daily Show, because it's just this vast landscape and it's developed into so many things, you know, my part in it was, I thought, this tiny little created by part. And the part that when I was going back into my brain was, we had such a different media back then, a corporate media that was equally as derelict, but in a different way. It was all the nighttime shows were crazy magazine shows that were scaring you with, you know, new. They would find three different weird anecdotes and then try to make it a trend, you know, like, is dental floss, you know, strangling your baby?
Or, you're talking about Dateline that I used to work for.
I know, thank you very much. You were there. But there was also Day and Date and Eye to Eye and One to One and You and Me. And there was like a million of these shows, right?
Telling you all the ways you could die. Right.
Or telling you period details of some celebrity tragedy. Or then there was all the trials that were on Court TV, and CNN was the only news network back then. So it was the baby shaking nanny, and it was like the trial of the century of the week. And so, and the local news was kind of, you know, the same thing. And so I was so weirded out by all of it. And then I would pay attention to it. But the thing that really got me was I was in New York on a blind date. Remember those? Before Match.com.
Never been on one. Yeah.
You know what? Again, smart woman. And someone had set me up with this guy, and I suggested we go see La Dolce Vita at the Film Forum. And he said on the phone, isn't that in black and white? Which should have been a clue that
yeah,
I canceled
red
the date.
Flag.
Yeah.
Right.
But I went anyway, and he fell asleep through the movie off and on. And I was so annoyed that I just at one point rubbed my greasy popcorn hands on him and then felt horribly guilty about doing that, and then decided that
he knows you did it now.
He knows I did it. And I also am from Minnesota, so I had this crazy compensation, like, well, that was mean, so now I have to be nice. So then I asked him out for a drink, extending this already horrifying evening. And so I said, where do you want to go? And he goes, well, let's go to the bar where I watch the Yankees. And I was like, oh, God. So we go to the bar, and it was the night of the first Gulf War. And the TV was on, and the whole bar was just mesmerized at the television.
It was CNN that you were watching.
It was CNN. And it was like the green light. That green war light and the graphics, and there was a theme song, and there was all these hot reporters, and I was watching it intently, and it literally had an epiphany where I thought to myself, are they reporting on a war or trying to sell me a war? And at that moment, my date goes, this is so cool. And I thought, there's something wrong with the way people are ingesting this information. And so from that point forward, I just became obsessed with how television reported the news, how they manipulate us emotionally. And it became kind of what I talked about a lot in my act and my stand-up. And then cut to 4 years later, Comedy Central called and said, we want to kind of do this show that's like a news show. Do you have any ideas? And I was like, you are kidding me. And since The Daily Show was born.
Well, let's go back those 4 years. You began to change what you talked about in your comedy act. How did the audience then respond to you talking about more political things.
Very interesting. It was kind of, there was something that I fully expected and then something that I didn't expect. And as I had transitioned from being just a regular monologist who had clever little jokes like, if you ever play Monopoly with bald guys, they always pick the hat. You know, like yeah. Hilarious, right? Wah, wah, wah. So as I started talking more about media, politics, I had to constantly find out where people were at as far as how much they know. And sometimes my little inside baseball they hated, or just even transitioning and still telling jokes that were kind of observational. I found that even if I would preface a joke by saying, you know, I think, and the rest of that joke could be Great Danes should have to wear underwear in public. The fact that I would preface something with I think instead of I feel, or don't you wonder, I became this threatening force on stage, and it was really interesting.
Do you think that's because you're a female?
I think part of it was. I think that, you know, we've evolved greatly, which is good, in the area with which women comics have really blossomed and we've really taken our own. And I think that when I started 150 years ago doing stand-up, I think we've made great strides. But I think when women were doing comedy, it was really okay. People liked it if they were making sure their comedy was about self-deprecation.
Or their husband. Or
their husbands, or how much their husbands didn't like them, or didn't want to have sex with them, or got drunk and had sex with somebody else, or how fat they were. You know, that was okay, because you were redefining a role that was acceptable to the audience. And that has changed dramatically, which is pretty cool.
But then what was your reaction when The Daily Show started getting headlines for being chauvinistic? The fact that The Daily Show had very, very few women writers, and Jon Stewart was called out by a number of female comedians.
Right. And I think I was so fascinated by the fact that it's the hardest show in the world to write, period. What people don't understand is, people don't quit there, right? So you have to hire the best person. You don't know when writing, and I can only speak for when I was there. When writing submissions came in, names were taken off of the writing submission. I got 150
immediately. They were anonymous.
Anonymous. I got 150 immediately. There wasn't back when I was there many women who were writing political satire, had political savvy, and were submitting. Because there was no shows doing it.
So out of 150, how many of those submissions?
Two.
Two of them were women.
Yeah. And I only know that because I knew the women. Yeah.
So there just wasn't the pool there. So do you think that the something like The Daily Show has made media better? I mean, there's lots of people watching The Daily Show. People talk about it. You see it quoted on all kinds of news sources. But then has that actually changed the behavior of the media as you've seen it?
Well, what I have observed, which is a startling thing, is the Daily Show calls bull. You know, they look at media, they line it up for you. They say, this person was lobbing softballs, there was no follow-up, this is a lie, you let this go, whatever. What the media, from what I gather, and when I talk about media, I'm talking about sort of corporate cable media.
And you're looking at me, though.
You know, Hockenberry, you're just part of the problem day in and day out. We all know that. Like, that's just, do I have to point that out?
Is blowing it the whistle again.
Hello.
I have no comment.
I woke up just to say, Hockenberry, you're part of the problem. So it's, when I watch the news shows now, they have wacky graphics. So their message is, wow, maybe we should do a little bit more investigative pieces, or maybe we should be a little bit more hard-hitting. What they've done is said, oh, we get it now. We're supposed to be funnier. And it's like, no, we don't need you to be funnier.
Oh, they're getting the wrong message.
We need you to be smarter. Yeah.
Okay. So of the media that you, I mean, coming up to this presidential election, which is the better, easier person to make fun of? Is it Mitt Romney? People assume it's Mitt Romney, but I think President Obama does some pretty funny things.
Well, I think it's a matter of, who is handing you material that you can run with, and with the longevity of things? And with Obama gets called out for crazy things, so you have to call out the crazy. It's practically not newsworthy because people aren't paying attention to greater policy debates, and that's part of the bigger problem with trying to do satire in this day and age, is that you can only do material that your audience is familiar with. You can't do a lot of explaining, right? So we don't hear a lot about what Obama is trying to get through or propose or get to the Congress. We hear a constant hailstorm of he's a Muslim and he is, you know, where's his birth certificate and all this other stuff. And it's really hard to even get stuff about him because the other side is doing this weird job. And you have to me, it's just funnier to talk about how moronic people are and how they prioritize things. And if that's how they're going to prioritize things, you know, defunding Planned Parenthood instead of maybe jobs.
Well, you can read all about the priorities of Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, in her new book. It's called Liz Free or Die. Liz Winstead, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And happy Mother's Day to you and your dogs.
Why, thank you. I wonder if they'll get me something.
I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.